Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
Hey, guys, you know how much I love Tommy John's underwear, undershirts, and their socks. They are the best. Yet, you know what? We're getting a lot of feedback from Hannity listeners, too. And guess what? Tommy John sent me a few testimonials from real live Sean Hannity Show listeners, so I'm going to share them with you. Dave says, I can't believe I'm saying this, but they have actually changed my life. Mark says, great materials, great fit, a great example of how doing something very basic, very well, can make a surprisingly positive impact on the quality of life. And Gary says, my grumpy stepfather actually thanked me for the gift of Tommy John's. That's a first in the 40 years I've known him. Louise says, my husband is walking, bending, and lifting all day. This is the first pair of underwear that doesn't roll down and ride up. He loves them. Now, you've heard the reviews. What are you waiting for? You have nothing to lose with Tommy John. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guarantee. Just go to TommyJohn.com/Hannity. You get 20% off your first order. TommyJohn.com/Hannity. 20% off. I had a ton of breaking news out there today, and some of it with the NFL, a lot of it with Harvey Weinstein. Oh my gosh, Hillary's actually spoken. I can't believe it. And all these women that have been quiet over these many years. Let me start with the NFL and, oh, also Steve Bannon last night on Hannity. It's gone viral. He's declared war on the establishment, but there's no other choice here. I mean, you know, what choice do we have? We either just accept their failure or we just make some changes as we can best possibly make so we can make some progress in this country. So I've got this sheet in front of me. I don't know. It's a memorandum. It's got the NFL logo on it. Anyway, so here it is, and it's to the chief executives, to the club presidents, from Commissioner Goodell. The date, October 10th. That would be today, isn't it? Today the 10th? Okay. Fall meeting, national anthem. And he goes on, basically, the NFL, it's already in the rules. I've read the rules many times here. There's plenty of obstacles for players. They don't have free speech rights in the NFL. They can't say, never forget 9/11/01 on the 15th anniversary of the worst terrorist attack in American history. They can't honor police officers who were slain in Dallas. And I'm telling you what's happening, because the ratings are down again for Monday Night Football. So don't think that this is happening organically and that, oh, all of a sudden they just want to stop this. No, this is happening because this is now impacting their pocketbook. This is about money. This is not about principle here. And Goodell, you know, if he really wanted to enforce, he could have gotten out of this 1-2-3. Goodell could have said, here are the rules, abide by the rules, or you pay the price. And he didn't do it. Now you've got owners that are watching the ratings decline, watching revenues decline, watching advertisers leave, and they're saying, all right, let's make a business decision here. And he comes up with a long way of basically, after weeks of declining TV ratings and, you know, fan boycotts and people fed up with this, now they may be on the verge of ordering players to stand during the national anthem. Anyway, the owners of the NFL are considering a rule change that would make it mandatory for players to stand. That actually bothers me as much. We've got to make the players stand for the anthem. I'd almost rather they be honest and take a knee. And then I can honestly say I'm not interested. Now we're going to force them. Where are they going to put us? There's going to be, well, I mean, you know, I don't want to force anybody. You don't want to stand for the anthem. I don't want to force you. But anyway, league spokesman said that the owners are going to discuss the potential change during a meeting next week. And Donald Trump tweeted that tax laws should be changed so the NFL doesn't get massive tax breaks while at the same time disrespecting our anthem, flag, and country. And I pointed out how many, you know, tens and hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent by taxpayers to fund these stadiums. Now, I don't necessarily think it's all a bad deal for the people in cities, because it generates a lot of jobs and a lot of businesses. And on some level, it does make economic sense at some points. But then there's the overuse. I mean, you got, I can't believe Atlanta is now building their, you know, Turner Field, and they got their new field. Now the new field is going to move out to the suburbs in Cobb County. How many more Brave stadiums do we need in Atlanta? And they're not expensive to build any of these things. Anyway, so the letter from Goodell goes, we live in a country that can feel very divided. Sports, and especially the NFL, brings people together and lets them set aside those divisions at least for a few hours. The current dispute over the national anthem is threatening to erode the unifying power of our game and is now dividing us and our players from many fans across the country. Oh, it took you weeks to figure that out. Okay. I'm very proud of our players and owners who have done the hard work over the past year to listen, understand, and attempt to address the underlying issues within their communities. At our September committee meetings, we heard directly from several players about why these issues are so important to them and how we can support their work. And last week, we met with the leadership of the NFL Players Association and more players to advance the dialogue. And like many of our fans, we believe that everyone should stand for the national anthem. It's an important moment in our game. We want to honor our flag, our country, and our fans expect that of us. We also care deeply about the players and respect their opinions and their concerns about critical social issues. The controversy over the anthem is a barrier to having honest conversations and making real progress on the underlying issues. We need to move past the controversy, and we want to do that together with our players. Building on many discussions with clubs and players, we have worked to develop a plan that we will review with you at next week's league meeting. This will include elements such as an in-season platform to promote the work of our players and their core issues, and that will help to promote positive change in the country. And we want to make sure that any work at the league level is consistent with the work that each club is doing in its own community and that we dedicate a platform that can enable these initiatives to succeed. Additionally, we will continue the unprecedented dialogue with our players. I expect and look forward to a full and open discussion of these issues when we meet next week in New York. Everyone is involved in our game. That is involved in the game needs to come together on a path forward to continue to be a force for good within our communities, protect the game, preserve our relationship with fans throughout the country. The NFL is at its best when we ourselves are unified in that spirit. Let's resolve that next week we will meet this challenge in a unified and positive way. Let me interpret. Well, let's see. We got the numbers are in. The ratings are in. Oh, Monday Night Football ratings plunged to a season low. So I guess Commissioner Goodell's call for the NFL players to end their national anthem protests, well, they already had the numbers in early this morning, so they're overnights. And by the way, according to Deadline, ESPN walked away, you know, with ratings that were 17% lower than the Monday Night Football game just a week before. I think that tells everything. And I've been saying, I said Saturday is now my football game. Anyway, 11.9 million viewers for football is nothing. Right, Jason? That's like half of what it really could be.
Yeah, if they're not careful, they might end up getting baseball rating.
Well, I mean, I think game five of the Yankees and the Indians choking is going to be pretty entertaining to watch, right?
I'll be watching. I'm praying the Indians lose. Oh, that would be bad.
That would be really bad. All right, so we got that going on. That's on the NFL, and now Goodell urging. It'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend. You know, I found a story this morning. It made me think of all that's happening. It was on Red State. They love me over there at Red State. That was a joke. Anyway, overnight, you know, it was a horrible case at Texas Tech. Student was shot and killed. University police officer. A student shot and killed a university police officer, fled on foot, leading to a campus lockdown until he was apprehended. I bet nobody in this audience knows the name of this person. Just like all the times we have named the people in Chicago, 3,900 people murdered in Obama's adopted hometown, 18,000 shootings in just the last 6 years of his presidency. So now the NFL is quietly tweaking its policy on players and standing for the anthem. Please, just please, whatever we can do. You're killing our business. Anyway, so, well, you know, we'll watch that happen. One of the more unbelievable stories, I have a theory about what's going to happen with Hollywood here. And to me, I'm interested in this because I've been sick of Hollywood for a long time. You know, all these Hollywood liberals, elitists, you know, they're the ones that lecture us about our SUVs, and yet they're the ones. Leonardo DiCaprio is a great example. You know, Mr. Green himself, you know, he has to celebrate New Year's Eve not once but twice. and he flies from Australia to Vegas on a private jet. But of course, you can buy carbon offsets, so therefore, it's just like buying a ring for your wife or girlfriend and saying, "Oh, I'm buying an infidelity offset." You know, therefore, here's the ring. I'm going to pollute the crap out of the planet, but I'll just buy carbon offsets, and then this way, my conscience is clear. I'll just buy you a diamond bracelet, necklace, and ring, and we'll be good, right? We're all good here. And that's the infidelity offset. Offsets don't work in my world. If you really believe it, what was the name of the guy? Ed Begley. I mean, at least the guy was a real green person that rode his bicycle everywhere. Or Daryl Hannah. I mean, she would admit she'd fly, but never private. She would always fly on a commercial plane, get coach, and she would try not to fly ever. I mean, she lives in a hut, and, you know, I think she eats leaves and grass. And I remember I offered to bail her out of jail that time. Anyway, so you got a lot of hip. I am going to bet. Now, I'll tell you what made me think of this is I'm reading some of the comments, and I'm beginning to think, you know, you've got Democrats in their pathetic attempt to invoke Trump to defend Weinstein. And, you know, the person that did it, Rob Reiner, was the top person that did that. Hillary finally comes out with a statement that's three sentences here. But anyway, Kathy Lee Gifford accused a different producer, not Weinstein, of forcing her to watch this guy as he masturbates. Now, by the way, Weinstein, somebody that I know that worked at the Fox News Channel, that happened with her. Probably one of the nicest people I ever met in my life. I'm not going to talk about the name. And then you got three women accusing Weinstein of rape. You got Gwyneth Paltrow, Madam Decoupling herself, Angelina Jolie. I bet you're going to hear a lot about this because I've heard these stories for years. I've heard that this is what happens in Hollywood. You know, you got a lot of young, good-looking girls. They want to be in television. They want to be in the movies. And they go out and they meet people. If you can give me certain favors, blah, 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 this is going to happen. But, you know, the problem is, you know, Hollywood embraced Roman Polanski. Does anyone forget Roman Polanski? Am I the only one that seems to remember the Roman Polanski issue? You go back, Roman Polanski, the great, what was he, a director, whatever his name is. He was arrested in Zurich in 2009 and in a failed attempt by the U.S. to extradite him, and more than 100 celebrities signing a petition demanding his release. At the time, Harvey Weinstein told CNN, "We're calling on every filmmaker to help fix this terrible situation." Well, I mean, if you think back, he's been known for Rosemary's Baby in Chinatown. He was the widow. I guess Sharon Tate was his wife. She was killed in the Manson killings. He won an Academy Award for Best Director in The Pianist. And anyway, the New York Times reported, you know, this is a guy that had sex with an underage girl. And you got all these Hollywood people, including Weinstein and Martin Scorsese and Woody Allen and Harrison Ford and Penelope Cruz and all these other famous people writing on Polanski's behalf. Why would you write on behalf of a pedophile, for crying out loud? And, you know, now he's been living all these years in France, I guess, right? And he never was, you know, never held responsible for what he did. The most well-known, he was 43 years old. He met a 13-year-old girl interested in taking photographs of her. Anyway, and with the expressed aim of sexualizing teenagers, et cetera, he took some pictures of her at a nearby home in Los Angeles. And then he asked her to sit for him. And Jack Nicholson apparently asked her to sit for him at the Mulholland Drive home of Jack Nicholson. Nicholson was traveling at the time. And anyway, the photo shoot went as planned, and it ended up with the two of them in a hot tub. And after giving the girl champagne and a Quaalude, which is a sedative, think Bill Cosby here, you know, he engaged in oral, vaginal, and anal intercourse with this 13-year-old girl. And all of Hollywood says, "You know, that's all right, come on back. We want you to come back to the United States. I want him in jail." Why statute of limitations on that? So fake feminist Hillary Clinton, she finally, how many days has it been now since the Harvey Weinstein issue broke? Been a 5? Well, she now came out in such a powerful fashion. And she actually said, after 5 days of silence, the world's most famous feminist issued a three-sentence statement condemning Harvey Weinstein. I was shocked and appalled by the revelations about Harvey Weinstein. The behavior described by women coming forward cannot be tolerated. Their courage and support of others is critical in helping to stop this kind of behavior. Now, all you have to do is just put aside in your mind Harvey Weinstein and just make a mental image of Bill Clinton and Bill Clinton's treatment of women. What did you want to tell me? Go ahead, put the mic on.
No, I just wanted to remind the audience about Hillary Clinton's strong support of victims of sexual abuse.
I want to send a message to every survivor of sexual assault. Don't let anyone silence your voice. You have a right to be heard, and you have a right to be believed. We're with you.
Okay, so let's take that statement. And I was shocked and appalled by the revelations about Harvey Weinstein. The behavior described by women coming forward cannot be tolerated. Their courage and the support of others is critical in helping to stop this kind of behavior. Did she ever once do that with, let's see, Paula Jones, Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, Dolly Kyle Browning, Monica Lewinsky?
No, and has she returned his donations?
I don't think she has returned her donations. That's a good question. She got more money than anybody. And the Obamas got plenty. I haven't heard from Barack Obama yet. Has he come out? Not a peep out of him. It's Donald Trump. Believe me, you're going to hear from everybody. I mean, meathead Rob Reiner from former All in the Family fame. I ran into him in the green room one day recently. I told him it was one of the greatest shows of all time. But he was a meathead, and he still is. His wife hated me. Oh, with daggers, hated me. Quick break. We'll come back. All the other news of the day. More on this as well. Straight ahead. By the way, James O'Keefe has more hidden camera stuff exposing the New York Times. He's going to join us. We'll play that for you later in the program. All right. So there was this sting operation with Harvey Weinstein. And I guess it was a woman that he was groping, grabbing. And I think is she one of the three? I don't know, because he got now three women accusing him of rape. And he's basically, you've got everybody now coming out saying, yeah, he did this to me. Yeah, he did this to me. Yeah. Anyway, so this is a tape of Weinstein, an audio of a New York Police Department sting, has him admitting to groping women while talking with a model. And it's obvious that he had groped and abused this woman and even admits it on tape. Here's the tape.
I'm telling you right now.
What do we have to do here?
Nothing. I'm going to take a shower. You sit there and have a drink. Water.
I don't drink. Can I stay on the bar?
No. You must come here now.
No.
Please.
No, I don't want to.
I'm not doing anything with you. I'm embarrassing you.
I'm sorry. I cannot. No, yesterday was a kind of aggressive for me. I need to know a person to be touched.
I won't do a thing.
I don't want.
Everything, please. I swear I won't. Just sit with me. Don't embarrass me in the hotel. I'm here all the time.
I
sit
know,
with me.
But
I promise.
Don't want to.
Please sit there. Please. Mm. 1 minute.
No,
I ask
I can't.
You to go to the bathroom.
Please, I don't
want to
do something I don't want
go to.
Go
to the bathroom. Come here. Listen to me.
I want to go downstairs.
I'm not going
to
do anything. You'll never see me again after this. Okay? That's it. If you embarrass me in this hotel.
I'm not embarrassing you.
Just
it's just that I don't feel comfortable.
Honey, don't have a fight with me in
it's
the hall.
Not
please, I'm not going to do anything. I swear my children to please come in on everything. I'm a famous guy.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now.
Please come in now and 1 minute. And if you want to leave when the guy comes with my jacket,
why yesterday you touched my waist?
No, please, I'm sorry. Just come on. I'm used to that.
Are you used to that?
Yes, come in.
No, but I'm not used to that.
I won't do it again. Come on. Sit here. Sit here for a minute, please.
No, I don't want to.
If you do this now, you'll embarrass me. I don't. Bye. Never call me again. Okay? I'm sorry. I promise you I won't do anything.
I know, but yesterday was too much for me.
I will never do another thing to you. 5 minutes. Don't ruin your friendship with me for 5 minutes.
I know, but it's kind of like, it's too much for me. I can't.
Please, you're making a big scene here.
No,
please.
But I want to leave.
Okay. Bye.
That's just so creepy. Just so horrible. You know, I remember I said this once on... Linda, you might remember this, and the left was beating me up. When I was a young kid and just wanted to date somebody, or you're dating somebody and like you reach over to hold their hand and they say, I'm sorry. You know, you try and you think the moment's right and you try and hold the person's hand and they say, I'm so sorry. You know, I don't understand creepy people, because that's like predator stuff that we're talking about here. And with that woman, and he's trying to bully that woman the way he is, it's really despicable. It's really despicable. You want to hear something else despicable? Designer Donna Karan. Listen to her suggest that Harvey Weinstein's victims were actually asking for it by the way they dress. By the way, isn't she a designer?
Yeah, she designs women's clothing.
Okay, I don't care if a woman is naked. No woman is asking for it. You don't blame the victim of a crime. Listen to what she says.
I think we have to look at ourselves. Obviously, the treatment of women all over the world is something that has always had to be identified. Certainly in the country of Haiti where I work, in Africa, in the developing world, it's been a hard time for women. To see it here in our own country is very difficult. But I also think, how do we display ourselves? How do we present ourselves as women? What are we asking? Are we asking for it, you know, by presenting all the sensuality and all the sexuality, you know, and what are we throwing out to our children today? You know, about
that's a huge question,
how to dance and, you know, how to perform and what to wear, you know, how much do they show?
Yes.
I don't think it's only Harvey Weinstein. I don't think we're only looking at him. I think we're looking at a world much deeper than that.
In a bigger picture in
Hollywood. Yes, and I think he's being looked at right now, you know, as a symbol. Not necessarily as him. I know his wife. I think they're wonderful people. Harvey's done some amazing things. And, you know, I think we have to look at our world and what we want to say and how we want to say it as well. It's not Harvey Weinstein. You look at everything all over the world today, you know, and how women are dressing and, you know, what they're asking.
You're trying not to dress
by just presenting themselves the way they do. What are they asking for? Trouble.
What are they asking for? Trouble? How does somebody, it sounds like Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble and Bam Bam, you know, what century is this woman living in, Donna Karan? I mean, I can't believe she's even saying that. Now, it goes far worse than this. You've got, you know, more allegations coming out against this guy, and it's now spreading like wildfire. And now that Angelina Jolie and Gwyneth Paltrow accused this guy of harassment, and the New Yorker published this expose where he claimed that he had raped three women and forced himself on four more. And Paltrow tells the New York Times that Weinstein invited her to his suite at the Pennsylvania Beverly Hills Hotel after casting her in the lead in the role for Emma and suggested they go to the bedroom for massages together. As he looked in the mirror, he's not exactly, you know, what makes him think that he's so powerful that he can just, oh, let's go get massages
because
together.
He is that powerful. That's how much power they've wielded upon him so that he can use it corrupt in a corrupt fashion.
He's just disgusting. I was a kid. I was signed up. I was petrified. She said she's only 22 years old. Is this what Hollywood's all about? This is the business of Hollywood? I have a funny feeling this is now going to open a Pandora's box, because I guarantee you there's been a lot of young women that went with dreams and aspirations, and they're good looking, and they go to Hollywood, and they meet these guys, and they promise them the moon. Oh, but first let's have dinner in my hotel room. Let's get massages together. Let's go out for drinks together. And I don't think their intentions are pure. Anyway, although, according to Paltrow, Weinstein threatened her to keep quiet, and she said, I thought he was going to fire me. Well, that's, you know, that's using his power against her. And anyway, Angelina Jolie said that she had a bad experience in her youth. She said, as a result, I chose never to work with him again, and I warn others when they did, the behavior towards women in any field, in any country, is unacceptable. You know, now this goes to, I'm going to bring up some things here that people are going to get mad at, because I think most of these women supported Hillary Clinton. And with all due respect, Bill Clinton was accused of rape, too. And I interviewed Juanita Broderick. And I interviewed Kathleen Willey, who claimed that she was literally pushed up against the wall and groped and grabbed and fondled and kissed against her will. And Paula Jones, who people made fun of her at the time, and people like James Carville said, oh, you drag a dollar bill through a trailer park. This was long before Monica Lewinsky. And that's just the tip of the iceberg with Bill Clinton. And in the case of Paula Jones exposing himself. And there are a lot of sick, ugly people out there when it comes to this crap. And they do despicable things. But I don't remember any one of these women being angry at Bill Clinton. And if I bet if I start looking over the White House logs when Bill Clinton's president, and even after Monica Lewinsky, even after all these allegations came out, they called Jennifer Flowers a liar, she wasn't lying. I bet you they donated to the Clintons. I bet you they donated to Hillary. Hillary said nothing except it's a vast right-wing conspiracy that was working against her husband. And Hillary Clinton, remember, everybody in the media was mad when these women came to one of the debates and actually sat in the audience when Donald Trump was debating Hillary Clinton. Oh, I know I'm not supposed to say that. Sounds like selective moral outrage on some of their parts.
And remember, Hillary Clinton, who said that she would defend any woman who ever was a sexual victim, was the same woman who disparaged those women and said that they were crazy and wrong and they were lying about her husband. She stood by him, not by the women.
I agree, but this is where a fine line is. Now, Weinstein is pretty much admitting it, that he's got problems as a means, I think, of deflecting it. Okay. There are false allegations made, too. But just because somebody says something doesn't always necessarily mean it's true. I mean, there's now a growing industry out there, people that want settlements, and they make allegations against famous people.
And that should be a crime, too. As a woman, I find it very offensive when women make claims like that, and they're untrue. And as far as I'm concerned, if you say that someone did something and they did not, and you're defaming them, and you could ruin their entire career because you just want to get some money out of it, you should go to jail.
I agree with you, too. You know, one of the things Great Britain has in the case of lawsuits is loser pays. But it doesn't appear that Harvey Weinstein in any way. Anyway, so, it's so bizarre because you got all of this. You got Hillary's 3-sentence statement on this 5 days later. You've got the top female designer apologizing, saying, suggesting victims ask for it. Then we've got, the Democrats now in their attempt to deflect and defend their buddy Harvey Weinstein. They're saying, let's go to Donald Trump and the Access Hollywood tape and locker room talk. Locker room talk is not the same thing that we're talking about here. Anyway, Kathy Lee Gifford accused a different producer of forcing, Kathy Lee Gifford's a lovely woman. Met her many times. I think the world of her. She's really nice. Here's a tough question to ask. At some point, if you are a feminist, at some point, if you've made it, at some point, if you're successful and you know there are predators out there, when does it become the right time to speak out and protect them? And I guess that's an individual thing. It's hard to say that people should take risks in life. But if you're really a feminist and you really believe that these women are victims and you know what happened and you're financially set for the rest of your life and your career is up and running and you don't have to worry about any one individual hurting your career and you know that person still has that sick behavior, does it come a point where you have a moral obligation to speak out? And is now a little too late? Were there other victims as a result of people not speaking out? Just interesting questions to ask here because this is such an important issue. Well, now what's going to happen to Harvey? But this is the same Hollywood that embraced Roman Polanski. Roman Polanski, plied the 13-year-old girl, gives her champagne and Quaaludes. She was 24 or 25?
No. What? No. She was 13. I was referring to audio.
Oh, you're talking to the audio. All right. Well, we've got cut 24 here. Listen, the 2011 Oscar goes to Roman Polanski. Let's listen to all the cheering.
And the Oscar goes to Roman Polanski for The Pianist.
Yes, Roman Polanski. I'm very sorry that he's in jail.
That's Meryl Streep saying he's very sorry. 43 years old or whatever, in his 40s, and she's a 13-year-old girl. And he drugged her. And he had sex with her. And raped her. Pretty sick. Just like all these stories about Bill Cosby. There's very, very ugly, twisted, sick human beings out on this earth. I can tell you that. And it seems to be getting worse every day. Really scary if you have young kids, isn't it? Just so scary. Anyway, 800-941-SEAN. Newt Gingrich is going to stop by. We got McConnell. We got Lamar Alexander. We've got everybody praising Corker after Corker insults Trump. And I think Newt's right saying, can we just focus on tax cuts and maybe making tax cuts the focus in the country and getting the agenda done in the country? 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll continue. All right, a lot coming up today. We'll have more on this Weinstein issue and duplicity. Anyone ever think, now does it matter when Sean Hannity says, as often as I've said, that Hillary Clinton taking money from countries where women are abused, told how to dress, can't drive, can't vote, can't leave the house without a male permission or a male relative, can't travel abroad, that men decide if they can go to work or go to school, does it now, the fact that she takes money and they bought her silence, does it mean more to you today? Does it now that it might, the hypocrisy that I pointed out, or that she takes countries money from countries for her foundation where gays and lesbians are killed? And over the years, well, Hannity, you don't agree with us on gay marriage. I'm libertarian. But I've also, you know, in so many different... But I'm the one that's been screaming now for years about the hypocrisy of taking money from countries that kill gays and lesbians. I'm the one that's been saying these are the countries that persecute Christians and persecute Jews. How many times do I have to say these things for people to begin to understand how deep this hypocrisy runs here? All right, we've got Project Veritas' James O'Keefe. He's got a new tape out exposing the New York Times. Then we've got Newt Gingrich is going to check in with us. Is he in studio? He's coming in studio and a lot more.
And if like it's an act to come, and sure that bothers me, just from the standpoint of, I mean, I know that he's necessarily a warmonger. I don't believe that he is a warmonger in any way. But watch his performances. Yeah. It very much feels to me like he thinks as president he's on a reality television.
Right.
You know? And I just, I mean, I don't think he understands that the messages that he sends out, especially when you take into account they're being received in other languages around the world, what that does. I know he's hurt in several instances. He's hurt us as it relates to negotiations that were underway by tweeting things out. And it worries me. I don't think he's a warmonger, but I don't think he appreciates that when the President of the United States speaks and says the things that he does, the impact that it has around the world, especially in the region that he's addressing. And it's concerning to me. A lot of people think that there's some good cop, bad cop act underway, but that's just not true. It's like he's doing the apprentice or something, he's just putting on an act.
I haven't asked for a show of hands, but I know everybody's saying we've been there, haven't done anything, which I find extremely irritating. And I'm going to tell you why. Congress goes on for 2 years, and part of the reason I think that the storyline is that we haven't done much is because, in part, the president and others have set these early timelines about things need to be done by a certain point. Now, our new president had, of course, not been in this line of work before, and I think had excessive expectations about how quickly things happen in the democratic process. And so part of the reason I think people feel like we're underperforming is because too many kind of artificial deadlines, unrelated to the reality of the complexity of legislating, may not have been fully understood. And, of course, our political adversaries would love to say that any time. So what I'm asking of you is to judge this Congress when it finishes. How much have we done to make America competitive again and to grow again? And that's part of America, making America great again, which is what the president talks about so much.
All right, so that was Mitch McConnell. We put too much pressure on Mitch McConnell over these many years, and Bob Corker, I don't think he expected that his comments about President Trump would be released by the New York Times as it was. We get a very rare special in-studio appearance by Newt Gingrich today, and by the way, his company, Gingrich Productions, and one by his wife, Callista, Remember the Ladies, a novel, and the speaker is co-written with Pete Early. It's called Vengeance, two new books that have come out. How are you, Mr. Speaker? Welcome to radio.
I'm having a ball, and
it's
a special treat to be here in the studio live with you.
I remember a Holiday Inn in Decatur, Alabama, and the year was 1990, when I first interviewed you via a Marty system.
And we were both much younger
right.
at the time. But it's amazing how the world's evolved, and these are remarkable times.
Yeah, they really are. All right, so let's talk about, you know, here I am 10 months later, and I expected that the Republicans, if they got the House and they got the Senate, and we got a Republican president, I didn't think that so many senators would be so against this president. Now, this is what I'm told by people who are in the room, that regularly many senators, including Lindsey Graham, including John McCain, including Ben Sasse, including Bob Corker, including Mitch McConnell, regularly trash the president. They don't like him at all. But as a result, I think it also is impacting their ability to get their job done. And it's, you know, some people are now saying, well, because Bob Corker said all of this, oh, that's now going to put the tax bill in a position where it may not get done. Well, maybe that's true, because that seems to have happened with John McCain on the health care bill. My question is the personal animus that senators have towards the president, is that productive for them? Is that productive for the president? And who gets screwed here but the American people?
Look, I think this whole back and forth is unproductive for everybody who cares about creating a more conservative America.
Mm-hmm.
it's not new. In 1916, Charles Everett Hughes, who was a Supreme Court justice and former governor of New York, was the establishment candidate for president for the Republican Party against Woodrow Wilson running for re-election. He arrived in Sacramento, and Hiram Johnson, who was the great leader of the populists and progressives in California, was on the fifth floor, and Hughes was on the eighth floor. Hughes refused to go down to meet Hiram Johnson, and Johnson, the populist, refused to go up to meet Hughes. On election night, Hughes won the election until they got to California and lost California by a narrow margin to Woodrow Wilson. And it was personal. I mean, personal things matter. Politics, in the end, is about people. The president's part of this. The House and Senate members are part of this. The news media is part of this. People like Steve Bannon are part of this. And people got to get a grip and decide what they want to do. If there's a very simple principle about how you pass legislation. And I say this having been, I think, somewhat more successful.
I think I think infinitely more successful would be a more accurate term.
Then the combined team, and I include the president in this. I think there are two ground rules that they just don't understand. The first is you get people in a room and you say, look, what do you have to have and what is it you can't have? And you go around the room and you build a box, and inside that box you have legislation because you find out what you can and can't do. The second thing you do is you understand that if you can't get 50 votes in the Senate under the Senate rules and you can't get a majority in the House, you ain't got nothing. All you got's press releases. And so you have to start out and say, show me the tax bill that gets 50 Senate votes. Now, I'll take a small tax bill. I'll take a big tax bill. I'll take a little reform. I'll take a lot of reform. But my simple question as a legislator is, show me what gets 50 votes. The other thing I'd say—
Why do we have to stay with Okay. Well, 50 votes if Mitch McConnell would get rid of cloture.
But nobody does for the tax. The tax bill is a 50-vote bill.
Okay. So then we ought to be able to get to 50 votes.
We ought to get to 50 votes, right. The other thing I would say to the president, which is something my mother taught me. I wonder if your mother taught you this. My mother used to.
I didn't listen a lot, Mr. Speaker. I was incorrigible.
Well, I didn't say I didn't listen a lot either, but I remember the I remember the message. But my mother used to say, you know, you get more flies with honey than with vinegar. Now, I actually never understood why you were trying to gather up flies, so I thought it was kind of a weird comment. But the point is, if the president wants to pass legislation, sometimes maybe he should not tweet.
How many months have you been telling him, or years?
Going back to the campaign. But this whole thing with Corker, look, Corker is basically a pretty decent guy. The president is Corker's natural ally. There's no reason for the current fight. Corker
going to the New York Times and saying all the things he said about the president?
But it was two-way street. I mean, Corker apparently said something early on. The president then attacked Corker. Corker's now attacked the president. My point to him as a practical manager of legislation is, okay, get over it. Have lunch. Decide, you know, our duty to the country is bigger than our personal disagreements.
But it's not happening.
No, and I think that's a huge mistake.
On everybody's part.
On everybody's part. And I think it takes you have to subordinate. I mean, as you know, because you were there, the number of times I had to subordinate what I wanted to what we needed was a key part of how we built the majority. We'd never have built the majority if it was Newt Gingrich alone. It took being willing to have a team, listening to the team, trying to do what the team wanted, and collectively moving towards the level of energy you needed to create the first majority in 40 years. Well, I'm really worried. I was not worried 2 or 3 weeks ago. When you and I talked about this, you know, I was pretty optimistic. I mean, a tax cut is so basically easy to do compared, say, to repealing Obamacare, which is very hard to do, that I was optimistic until about a week ago that they would be able to get this done just because.
You're not optimistic anymore.
No, I mean, I'm worried now because I'm watching both the calendar start to slide. I'm watching these personal fights begin to consume things. You know, and again, a good example you cited, I don't know what Lindsey Graham says in private, but I know he just went golfing with the president. I know that he's at least pretending to have a good relationship with the president. Well, a lot of politics is pretending. And if you can get enough people.
So we have a bunch of phonies that are in D.C. That's a shock.
Well, it was true of the founding fathers, too. Look, the fact is these are human beings. Many of them have very strong feelings. But they also understand that they have an obligation that the country, or they should understand, that the country is much bigger than they are. And that the requirements of this country right now, I mean, if we cannot pass a tax cut, I think 2018 becomes a very hard election. Because you both have nothing to show in practical accomplishment, and I think this economy is a little shaky. I think the tax cuts would really rev up the economy, and particularly if there's a strong small business tax cut, you would see real economic growth, real take-home pay increase, and by next fall you'd see Republicans campaigning as the party of jobs and take-home pay, and I think they'd get reelected handily. But if they campaign as the guys who can't get anything done while the economy decays, then I think they have a really tough election.
You know, here's my biggest complaint. And maybe, you know, I liked what you did in the first 100 days.
Yeah.
And I like the fact, and I had urged them. You see over there on the wall, it says Conservative Solution Caucus 2014. Okay, I did this in 2013. And the idea was I was asking people to nationalize the election. It's a great idea. Nobody had ever thought about it before. Oh, wait a minute, you did.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it. And here it is 10 months later, and this is, I think, everybody's frustration. They weren't ready for repealing and replacing. You can't, it's like the gang that can't shoot straight. They're not ready for this tax bill, although you're right, it's simple on paper, 7 brackets to 3. Okay, then we'll drop the corporate rate to 15% to 20%. Then we'll repatriate the trillions that are overseas for multinational corporations. We'll simplify the tax code that you can do it online or on a postcard. Doesn't seem that hard on paper.
Right. And the first big test upcoming is the budget, which they have to pass to get to reconciliation, so it only takes 50 votes. Now, my sense is in the House they may have actually worked this out. And I think they're a little bit optimistic they're actually going to pass the budget in the House. But then the question is, can they pass the budget in the Senate And that's where the kind of petty bickering is not very helpful.
You want to take some calls? You're staying
sure.
for the hour.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll open up our phones for Newt Gingrich. By the way, there's a brand new book out, and it is a novel that you have written with Peter Early, and it's called right. Vengeance. Obviously, it's about the light and love in the human heart. I want to ask you about Weinstein and what it says about the Democratic Party. Hillary, 5 days later, has now finally weighed in on it. The Obamas have not weighed in on it. And what that means and the double standard that exists. 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to talk to the speaker. All right, we have a rare in-studio appearance. Newt Gingrich is with us, former Speaker of the House. He's got a brand-new book out. It's called Vengeance. And his wife, Callista, part of Gingrich Productions, produced the latest edition, a children's book, and also the elephant. It's called Remember the Ladies. We'll talk about all these things later. So, all right, so you're less optimistic. I'm less optimistic. My frustration is that we've had 10 months of Donald Trump as president. They've had all these years, you know, they never talked about inspiring ideas like health savings accounts. They never talked about health care cooperatives, Mr. Speaker. They never tried to sell something really better. There's certain things that are unforgivable. One is if you really want to lead and you're not prepared when the moment comes, right. not even remotely so.
Right. And the question now is what can they learn from that? And I had hopes and frankly, at least on the House side, and I know you and I don't totally agree on this, but I think Paul Ryan has learned a great deal from the failures of the spring. I think they're much better prepared. If you look at the stuff they're doing, I'm carrying the Paul Ryan postcard in my coat, and I wave it all the time.
By the way, I think you initiated it on my TV show.
Well, it's possible, but they've done a great job with it. I know I was picking it up from Paul. I mean, he had talked about it, and then they made it, and it's the next stage is going to be trying to get them to make it into an icon that every Republican can download. Because I think they're going to have problems in the Senate. I think part of it is that everybody's gotten into this cycle of running to their corner and yelling no. So you've got Corker who worries about the debt. You've got Rand Paul who worries about something else. You know, you just go down the list, and some of it goes all the way back to Cruz in 14 and 15. Where different people have gotten these habits. Now, on the House side, I have to say, I think that the Freedom Caucus has really been much more positive and has been trying to figure out how to get to yes on something as important as tax cuts.
I think they're the most productive force in Congress right now.
Well, I think they've been very, very helpful. I think Ryan would say that the House is closer to being able to pass something big than it's been at any time this year. But part of this, and it's the only one of the There are two things that worry me. One is the schedule, because I think they've got to get this done by Thanksgiving in order to have it have an impact the first and second quarter. And they need a very robust first and second quarter economically. So people have an election about
prosperity. You would think their own self-survival would motivate them. All right. Bannon was on TV last night, and I want to play some of his comments for
sure.
you. I want to get your thoughts on everything that's happening with Weinstein and the left and hypocrisy, I think, at a pretty high level. And the left does not have a monopoly of compassion on racial issues, on issues involving women and women's rights and religious freedom. And more with Speaker Gingrich straight ahead.
Donald would not be majority leader unless Trump in North Carolina, in Missouri, in Wisconsin was able to carry those senators across the finish line. It is incumbent upon them to back President Trump's plan, but you don't see it. What you saw with Corker said today is what they talk about on Capitol Hill. That's when I left the White House. Remember, I said, I'm going after the Republican establishment. And we're going to go after them. We're going to challenge. There's a coalition
coming
together.
Give me the states.
There's a coalition coming together that's going to challenge every Republican incumbent except for Ted Cruz, whether it's Utah, Wyoming, whether it's in
Orrin Hatch in Utah.
Orrin Hatch in Utah. Today, Boyd Matheson, who is the chief of staff for Mike Lee, came out and said that he's going to set up an exploratory committee.
In North Dakota,
we don't have that's a Hobbs County. But we're going. By the way, we're going in Mississippi against Wicker.
Who you pick, McDaniel?
McDaniel, Mississippi. These names are all going to come out over the next couple of weeks. There's going to be about.
So it's
15.
Not going to be. I know a lot of people didn't like in 2010, for example, Delaware. Well, I thought Christine O'Donnell was a nice woman. But you're picking solid, credentialed candidates.
We're spending a ton of time with the grassroots organizations to make sure that these candidates are fully vetted. You're going to see people announced this week that are going to have experience in government. You're going to see some outsiders that are authentic, and these people are real. It's not like 2010. 2010 was the beginning of the Tea Party when things were first getting going. You're going to see real candidates. And by the way, they're going to take on incumbents in every state, and they're going to take on the Democrats after
you said
that.
How do you make a promise for 7.5 years and not fulfill it?
It's a lack of sense of urgency. By the way, these guys work 3 days a week. The American people, now people working two jobs, their wives are working two jobs. They know the urgency out there on the economic hate crimes that have been perpetuated on the American working men and this women in this country because of the trade deals.
Is this a fair statement? Is Steve Bannon declaring war on the establishment that are not for the working men and women in this country?
100%. We are declaring war on the Republican establishment that does not back the agenda that Donald Trump ran on and the President of the United States. And that is an agenda that we know backs the working men and women.
This is basically a war because you know what McConnell did in Alabama. And you know there are people out there. Look at that.
I've had donors.
Carl Rove is going to put in all their money.
Carl Rove, Stephen Law, these guys should get the joke. Their donors are coming to us because they're tired of having their money burned up by trying to destroy people like Judge Moore. That's a new game in town. We're going to cut off the oxygen to Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell's biggest asset is the money. We're going to make it the biggest liability. We're going after these guys tooth and nail.
All right, 24 till the top of the hour. Toll free, our number is 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to be a part of the program, we have Newt Gingrich for the full hour. A lot of people on the phones want to talk to Newt. 800-941-SHAWN. He's got a brand new book out today. He co-authored with Peter Early. It's called Vengeance. And also his wife, Callista, through Gingrich Productions, has put together the latest Ellis the Elephant in a series. It's called Remember the Ladies. And it's a great book for kids. And all the illustrations are pretty amazing, actually. And I know they've all become bestsellers and they've done very, very well. You know, you're not going to top your last book, Understanding Trump. It was number one on the New York Times list. Now you think every book's going to be number one?
No, but I think, look, I tell everybody, Vengeance is about terrorists working with the North Koreans, swapping oil for nuclear material to set up a dirty bomb. So if you want to be sobered about reality, you read Vengeance. Remember the Ladies is for 48-year-olds. It's all the president's wives. So if you want a really happy book, you get Remember the Ladies.
Is that it?
So we're offering you two emotional experiences in one day.
All in one? Well, it's terrific. Now, you're going to be moving to Italy. You're going to be moving to the Vatican.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm talking about Remember the Ladies is that Calista can't, because she has now been nominated to be the ambassador to the Vatican.
Well, I don't imagine she's going to be viewed as controversial, is she?
I don't think so. She got a cloture vote last Thursday, 75-20. It was a very solid vote, and she gets a confirmation vote next Monday, and it looks like she'll go through very comfortably. Then it takes about 3 weeks to get everything organized, and so she should be in the Vatican in early November. And we've already talked to Fox about having a studio over there so I can stay in touch.
I think we'll just put it in your house because by the time we get on, it's going to be 2 a.m. Yeah. I'm going to be dragging you out of bed, and you know how that call's going to go. No, we really need you tonight. I'll send you and Callista to a great restaurant in Italy, which
You can't send her. She's a government employee.
Well, I can send you with extra spending money. Welcome. Well, what are you going to do with all your advice you've given Donald Trump? I know you've been over the White House a lot.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm coming. I'll come back twice a month.
I feel the way Bannon does. I've had it with these guys. Now, here's what happened yesterday. We're talking about Bob Corker. Bob Corker then gets support of Mitch McConnell and Lamar Alexander. And it's like, I don't think these guys know how angry we are, the people, how betrayed we feel.
Probably not. But they don't care either. No, well, look, the point I would make as a strategist is you've got 10 Democrats up next year from states Trump carried. You have 6 Democrats up next year from states Trump carried by a huge margin. Now, you take the amount of money Bannon is going to raise. If he spent that money in North Dakota, Montana, Indiana, Missouri, West Virginia, the fact is you'd have such a big Republican majority, you'd pass the stuff you guys want to pass. Creating a civil war inside the Republican Party may feel good, but I think as a strategy it is stunningly stupid. I mean, I'm just being really honest.
I've actually suggested, and I've offered to pay, that all the Republicans in the House and Senate get in a room, and I'll pay for all the pizza they can eat. They ought to turn off the air conditioner so they can be more like our framers and founders. And I'll even say and send in modern-day pizza so they can stuff their fat faces and maybe come out after just a certain amount of time and do something.
There was actually a conclave to select a new pope about 700 years ago where people walled them off and cut off their food.
And yeah,
said,
exactly.
You don't get fed until you select somebody.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, so there is some historic precedent.
Well, listen, look what happened in Alabama. Nobody wanted, nobody in the establishment wanted Roy Moore, and McConnell spent millions and millions, and I think Karl Rove spent millions and millions, and they lost.
Well, and frankly, I think in part because they beat a conservative congressman who they targeted initially, and I don't think they realized they were creating a vacuum.
Mo Brooks.
And Mo Brooks' voters didn't go to the incumbent. They went to Roy Moore.
Right.
And
well,
I endorsed
Mo. I've known Mo used to, 27 years ago, filled in on this radio show when I was in Huntsville, Alabama.
Yeah. So I don't think they understand. Look, but this is a double dynamic that's really interesting, and Randy Evans wrote me about it last night, and I was fascinated with his point. When you have Feinstein, for example, guaranteed a left-wing opponent, and you see the left wing of the Democratic Party getting more left wing, and then you see the anger on the right, what you have in part, and this sort of reflects what's going on in Europe. It affects the vote in Catalonia, where I think they are in the process of.
I think Catalonia is done. They're going to get out.
Well, and of course, you know, that means every California left winger is going to go, wow, we have a whole new model here.
By the way, I'm really happy about that model. I'm all for California separating itself. That's 55 electoral votes we don't have to worry about anymore.
That negotiation will be fascinating. But this is what's happening all over the world.
Could happen in Texas, too, though.
People are uncomfortable with the current environment all over the world, and you're seeing this kind of breakdown of the system. You saw it in Germany in the election where Merkel had the lowest majority they've had since 1946, or the lowest vote they've had since 46, and where the fringe parties gained enormous amount of strength. And I think that we're seeing it here. You had people on the right are really unhappy, people on the left are really unhappy, and people in the establishment of both parties can't deliver. Now, that's sort of where we are right now.
This election was about the forgotten men and women.
Right.
You see that painting in the corner there with with this young man on a bench, John McNaughton. I have the original. The original's massive. And John McNaughton is a guy in Utah, and he painted that. And you got all the presidents. If you noticed, Obama's foot is on the Constitution. But you got 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. And we doubled the debt and the worst recovery since the 40s and the lowest labor participation rate, all these things. What frustrates me is I thought when you go into government, you're about being a public servant.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of service going on here.
Well, I mean, part of it is when you go into government, it's also about power, and it's hard. And I don't mean that as an excuse. I'm just saying.
Well, working every day is hard if you're a contractor and if you're.
No, but what I'm saying is I think that unless you're willing to humble yourself enough to learn the trade, you know, it's a little bit like trying to fix a car if you have no idea how to fix a car. I mean,
right.
You know, you can hitch four horses and pull it, but that's not a very efficient technique.
Hasn't McConnell been there long enough to learn how to fix the car?
I think that he has, and I think, frankly, that we're in an environment right now where these guys. McConnell and Ryan and Trump and Pence should be meeting every week, and they should be meeting together, and they should get to know each other better, and they need to have some mutual respect. It doesn't exist right now. I think it's a genuine challenge for how you make the machine work.
Hillary Clinton, finally, after 5 days of silence, and she's taken a fortune over the years, as has the Obamas and the entire Democratic Party from Harvey Weinstein. I was shocked and appalled by the revelations about Harvey Weinstein. The behavior described by women coming forward cannot be tolerated. Their courage and the support of others is critical in helping to stop this kind of behavior. Now, some Democrats have given the money to other liberal causes, and some haven't commented at all about giving the money back. I can take her statement and apply it to all the women that her husband was involved in.
I think that's why it took 5 days. I mean, Ben Domenech, who does the Transom, which is a daily blog that's really smart,
right,
had a piece yesterday that said two fascinating things. One, that had Hillary won, you'd never have seen this story because nobody on the left would have allowed it to appear. And two, that part of what it's a symptom of, I thought this was absolutely fascinating, Weinstein could actually provide movie stars to Vogue magazine and to all these various publications. And so they all had a reason not to unmask him. But now you're in a media environment where there are all sorts of people that he couldn't bribe, that they had, and so they could start covering it.
So is that ultimately good?
I think it's good.
Have you read your Twitter account lately?
look, there's no question, and Calista and I have talked about it sometimes, because you read some, particularly somebody who's up at 3 o'clock in the morning, who's in our case a left-winger, I'm sure for Democrats a right-winger, who...
We call them keyboard warriors in their underwear.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Right. And they're able to be really tough, and a lot of them are able to be really vulgar. On the other hand, I would say...
You'll take the freedom.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's the voice of freedom.
I agree with you. Let me ask you about the NFL. Looks like the lower ratings and revenue has finally had an impact. And Roger Goodell, well, I think we need to listen to our fans, and they're going to have a big meeting next week. And I'm kind of confident that after all the bad press they've had about these guys taking a knee for the anthem, that things are going to change. But I'm not exactly sure that it's out of altruism or an understanding of what the issues are at hand, and that is the flag, the anthem, and those that fought, bled, and died.
Right.
I think it's more about money.
Well, look, I think, first of all, this is one of those classic moments when President Trump intuited something. The elite media thought he was wrong. They all attacked him. And at the end of it, the American people said, oh, no, we're with him.
Right.
I mean, the NFL, my good friend Dave Winston just produced a poll that showed the NFL was the lowest rated professional sport in America now. 5 years ago, it had been the highest rated.
Oh, it may even be the highest, well, but people aren't saying it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, when it costs $400 or $100 a ticket, a family of four, $400, two jerseys for the kids, that's $600. You buy two beers, two Cokes, and a hot dog, now you're up to $1,000.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot of money for a family.
Well, in addition, I mean, I watch most of my football at home. But if I tune in, I don't tune in to be lectured by the people who are entertainers. These guys are entertainers.
They're getting paid a lot of money to play a sport that they love.
Right. And I think in that sense, they owe some respect to their audience, as well as a lot of respect to the American flag.
They wouldn't be doing it but for the sacrifice of those that fought, bled, and died with that flag. All right. Are you doing any book signings, any book events?
Well, actually, tomorrow night I'm going to be at Barnes & Noble in Tyson's.
Tyson's Corner?
In Virginia.
Virginia? Okay. So that's tomorrow night. I'll put it up on my website.
Right.
The new book is Vengeance. Calista can't come and do interviews
now. And she can't go to the book signing. She's gone nuts. She said to me yesterday, can I come? Like a little
kid. And her latest installment of Ellis the Elephant, Remember the Ladies, are you going to sign books in her name? Because she's got better handwriting than you.
She signed book plates before the Senate voted.
Very good. Well, congratulations, although we're going to miss you a lot. I think I have to go over to Italy and see you.
Constantly, but you want to come over, we'll do a live show from Italy.
That'd be fun.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Am I going to get an audience with the Pope, those liberal Pope?
That's up to you.
I don't know if he's going to want to see me.
I am not going to.
You're not going to ask your wife about that?
I'm not fronting for you to.
All right, all the books are on Hannity.com. Right. James O'Keefe is next. He has an expose the New York Times is not going to like. All right, when we come back, an expose. James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, exposing the New York Times, another infiltration on his part. It's going to be part of, I think, a 2-3-4 day series that he's going to expose. We'll get to all of that. We got an awesome Hannity tonight, 10 Eastern. We will talk about Republican failure. We will talk about Harvey Weinstein. We will talk about the failures of the Democratic Party, this false narrative that they have the monopoly of compassion, and so much more coming up. Also, in the final half hour of the program, we'll get to your calls. And, well, would Bob Corker have actually lost in the great state of Tennessee? Some say yes. You'll meet one of those people. Straight ahead.
So as the gatekeeper for, like, videos on the New York Times, do you get to, like, make sure that you, like, can make sure your message is heard?
Yeah.
Cool.
Like, my voice is on every, my imprint's on every video we do.
Cool.
So I like that.
Dudick says his role at the Times comes with editorial responsibility. Yet he admits to having no interest in putting his political biases aside.
And you're going to be helping with the Times, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
I will be objective.
Yeah.
That's why I'm there. After the campaign, I'm like, no, I need to get back in the news and keep doing it. It's like, this isn't going to change.
He also told our undercover journalist a bizarre story about a very personal connection to a very newsworthy person. A story that, if true, is an undeniable conflict of interest for the Timesman.
The one thing that Jim Comey said, and I've met him, he's a great guy, actually.
How'd you meet Comey? Just, like, working in the campaign?
No. Godfather.
He's your godfather? Really? Mm-hmm. How's that happen?
My dad and mom, he's been his wife for a really long time.
Aw. Man, so you're connected.
Yeah, I don't... That's something... Even John Michael has an idea that no one at the time has an idea that.
You heard that right. Dudick claims to be the godson of controversial former FBI director James Comey, the guy President Trump fired in May.
So anytime we clip something from whether it's like the Sessions hearing or Comey hearing, like I had, well, the Comey hearing, I should have recused myself. I should have, but I'm not ever telling anybody there.
Yeah.
That I have tie with that, or else I don't know if they can keep me on.
To be honest, Nick, I asked your dad about Comey and the FBI, and he told me it wasn't true.
Okay.
So, I mean, how much are you lying to me about?
Not much.
Well, what's going on? Why would you lie about that?
Not that?
Yeah. Why would you lie about Comey?
Not sure.
Okay, well, is Comey your godfather?
Comey?
Is James
not
Comey your... He's not?
No.
Then why did you say that?
I don't know. Good story.
All right, joining us now from Project Veritas is James O'Keefe. Sir, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hey, Sean. Great to be back with you.
I see you're staying out of trouble as usual and not stirring things up. So tell us what you got on the New York Times. I want you to explain the tapes we just played.
Well, usually it's staying in trouble, but this is our sting operation inside the New York Times newsroom, part one. As always, there's more to drop. As always, the mainstream media ignores the very first thing. But this is an interesting video of an editor for the New York Times. He's actually their audience strategy editor. He's responsible for their videos. He says his imprint is, quote, on all the videos that we do. And this is a 15-minute long video. And he's talking about how and the lead here is how the New York Times is, quote, not objective. And he's talking about their political agenda and how the Times slants news coverage to target Trump and this is a direct quote, boycott his hotels, ruin the Trump brand, and put pressure on his business. And he's talking about this political agenda. And that may not surprise people, but people have suspected this. We've never actually had tapes of New York Times reporters saying that much. And the New York Times manual actually, the ethical handbook actually says that journalists cannot be political and they cannot do anything that questions their professional neutrality. Here you have minutes and minutes of audio of this reporter for the New York Times talking about his political agenda.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. They say that they're the paper of record. They say they don't have an agenda of any kind. So this guy is in charge and he's making decisions about how this paper is putting stories up close, front and center, right? I mean, this isn't their editorial page. This is their news division.
Yeah, this is their news division. He's responsible for branding and curating their videos. And when prompted about being objective, he says, no, I'm not. That's why I'm there. Mm. And he says he's actually going to bring anti-Trump stories to the front, he says. We always do. Quote, unquote, we always do. Bring anti-Trump stories to the front. He also makes up a claim that we were not able to corroborate. He claims that he was involved in Antifa. He said, I used to be an Antifa punk once upon a time. They'd start SHIT, and I'm like, I get to hit you. I'm so excited. He also claims that there's a conflict of interest with him because he claims he has a relationship with James Comey, the former FBI director. He actually did videos on this, and he did not recuse himself. And he's saying that if anyone ever found out, he said, I should have recused myself, but I'm not ever telling anybody at the Times, unquote. So this guy is someone with almost no integrity. He's either making some of this up, or he's lying because he's trying to cover up the fact that some of it is true. But he's clearly someone with no integrity who's responsible for all of their videos at the New York Times, and we're really getting to see who these people in the mainstream media really are. We finally are able to look inside their hearts and hear their voices. My favorite moment in the video is where he says, yeah, I'm going to be objective. He puts it in quotes with bunny ears, and then he leans into the hidden camera and goes, no, I'm not going to be. So we're really starting to see who these people are, and the New York Times, they have to fire him.
Do you think they will? I mean, have you tried to get response from them in light of this? Do you know what's going on inside there today?
Well, there's more. What's interesting, Sean, is you remember the Democracy Partners story? I came on your show on the first day. Nobody wants to say a word. They want to ignore it. No one wants to talk about it. The mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it. I called the New York Times. I talked to Jeremy Peters. I talked to one of their ombudsmen, and they have not issued a statement. They're not willing to issue a statement. But because the internet is lighting up, it's on the top of Drudge. I'm on your show right now, and people are hearing this. And we're going to drop another video. We have multiple videos, and we're going to drop more videos to substantiate a lot of what's in this video. I think they're going to have to respond. They're going to have to let him go or react some way. And depending on how they react, that will determine my next move, because I have to do it this way, because I have a handicap when it comes to mainstream media trying to cover it. Just like the covering up the Weinstein story.
What was the whole thing that he's related to Comey, which we just played? That was odd to me. And then he said, oh, I don't really.
Well, that's actually very odd. He over in multiple meetings with multiple people, this New York Times reporter talks about a conflict of interest. He says, the Comey hearing, I should have recused myself, but I'm not ever telling anybody at the New York Times that I have a tie with James Comey, or, quote, I don't know if they can keep me on. And he says this in different meetings. We actually talked to his parents. We talked to his mother, his grandmother, and a couple of them would not confirm or deny whether they had a relationship. Eventually, he said he just made it up. So we're not able to confirm or deny it, but it's definitely evidence that he's a liar. We know for a fact that this reporter is a liar, that he's walking around telling people about a conflict of interest he has and how he's not politically objective. And if people think that I'm lying, I would just ask them to wait for part two, because it goes deeper. We have more editors on tape. That's what Drudge is teasing. We have more coming. And we have more people inside the New York Times, and I think that's probably.
So they're all claiming a political agenda. I mean, that's the whole thing. All right, let me play another cut of this. Of this guy admitting again he used to work for Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Like, as a journalist, I'm not able to give any money to any political organization. I'm not able to volunteer for any political organization. I'm not able to work for any nonprofit or charity. Like, there's a lot of guidelines and, like, ethics.
So you've never been involved politically or anything?
Oh, I have. I was a volunteer strategist for the Clinton campaign, and that's why I ended up at Upworthy, because I wasn't even a journalist anymore.
Oh, so wait, how do you kind of square that, though?
So
did you have to disclose that to them?
I had to leave my job at Fusion ABC to then take a job at Upworthy, where I wasn't deemed a journalist anymore, to be able to work for the Clinton campaign.
So thank you for trying.
Yeah.
So that was before.
It was a gallant effort.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, okay, I saw the threat and I was like, I want to do something. I can't just do what I do, because, yeah, Trump was a threat. And
Trump is a threat.
Still is a threat.
He's a threat.
You still think he's a threat, right?
Oh, he's a threat to everything.
All right, so there you go. I mean, how do they justify keeping this guy on? That's what I want to know.
Well, Sean, I don't think they will. I mean, the story's just broken, but just so I can tell your audience what was just said, Dudik here, the video strategy editor for the New York Times, who his video imprint is on every video that we do, who's responsible for curating all the videos of the New York Times, claims and says here, quote, like, after the Clinton campaign, no, I need to get back into the news and keep doing SHIT because this isn't going to stop. So he's talking about a political agenda. He's talking about his specific political agenda. He worked for the Hillary campaign. He worked with people at YouTube that he hired. This guy has relationships with YouTube. More on that soon. And the New York Times Ethical Handbook, Section 107 states, I don't think your audience knows this, the Ethical Handbook states that staff members may not get political. They cannot talk. They cannot have an agenda. They cannot do anything that compromises their neutrality. So it's only a matter of time before the New York Times has to react. I cannot wait for them to say it's an isolated incident, because when they do, then I will drop part two.
And this
when
is what,
they say it's isolated.
And what's so important is, I mean, you do this all the time. It's like you're going to lay it out day by day. Do you think other people are going to be as implicated, be implicated like this guy is? In other words, is this going to be mass firings?
Yeah, I think there's going to be at least a few firings. But I think what the New York Times is betting, just like with the Weinstein thing, what I've found with our work is that people don't do the right thing because for integrity reasons. They do the right thing because they're exposed and because the sun is shining a light and people putting pressure on. They don't do the right thing and take action based on the fact that they ought to do so. They're only doing the right thing because there's cameras shining a light on them all. So people, your audience has to put pressure. If you're listening to this broadcast, I would say watch this New York Times sting investigation, projectveritas.com. And more important than that, send us a tip, because people, the reason how I got here, the reason how we're able to do this is because people from the inside, people on the inside of the New York Times were letting me know where the bodies are buried. They told me who to go after and who to investigate. And it's veritastips@protonmail.com if you want to send us information inside of these media companies to keep this investigative journalism going.
Well, we got to give you a lot of credit. James O'Keefe, we appreciate what you're doing, and we'll have you back with the new developments as the days go by. And thanks for sharing it with us. And we'll probably be hitting this tonight on Hannity as well. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue. 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program, and your calls and comments are straight ahead. All right, as we roll along here on this Tuesday, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, let's go to Jess. Is in Kansas City, Kansas. What's going on? You're on the Sean Hannity Show.
You guys do a great job, you and your team. I just want to talk about the NFL protest. I work for a big box store. And, you know, the one that's getting hurt the worst are the forgotten men, because people are stopped buying the merchandising. They're stopped, you know, stuff that the forgotten men and women are building and making by hand. So, I mean, somebody needs to get a hold of this. It's not hurting the owners as much as people probably think, or the players. They don't care. You know, just like with Martha Stewart.
No, but you got it. But let me tell you why it's hurting. Ratings are down dramatically. They're losing advertisers and they're losing people. And so when Roger Goodell sent this out to the chief executives and the club presidents today, his letter on the fall meeting in the national anthem, I mean, what he's basically saying here is we got to stop this. He's not saying it in so many words. Or we can come up with other ways to help the community.
It seems to fall back on the little guys that, you know, behind the scenes and stuff like that, which, you know, like, say, with Martha Stewart, when she bashes the president, you know, her stuff sitting on the shelf, people walk right by and comment about it. So they're not realizing how much it's hurting the small people, I don't think, either.
Yeah. Well, I think the people that are fed up with it are the fans. And the fans are the ones that recognize that what this is really all about. And, you know, the players, you know, everybody's, you know, everyone's taking this position. Oh, we have the right to freedom of speech. You don't have freedom of speech in the NFL. If you did, you'd be able to put Never Forget 9/11. You'd be able to honor police officers killed in your community. You'd be able to do a lot of things. You'd be able to twerk in the end zone. There's a lot of things you can't do. So my guess is what they're going to do is they're going to maybe set up like a special time that the NFL players can do it. That's what but it's not going to be during the anthem. I can tell you that. Patricia, Montgomery, Texas, next. You're on the Sean Hannity Show.
Yes. Hi, Sean. I just had a comment on the NFL, this linking of the arms. I don't know how to interpret that. I mean, they're saying it's in solidarity. Solidarity for what? I mean, is this against Trump, which would really make me mad, or is this solidarity for our anthem? I mean, I don't even know.
There's been a lot of confusion. There's no singular cause, I think, that has in any way defined what is going on with each individual team. I mean, if you go back to Colin Kaepernick, I mean, Colin Kaepernick wrapped himself around a charity that literally helps a foundation of a cop killer. And then you've got the cops depicted as pigs. Then you got his embracing of a murdering dictator, Castro. Now, do I think the other players are doing that for that reason? No, I would suspect that it has to do with societal problems and issues of race in America. That's what I'd guess. But are they defining it? No, they're not. Anyway, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. A lot of people in Tennessee are pissed off at Bob Corker, like I am. And I'm sick of all these lazy people that can't get their job done. We'll take a quick break, and we'll check in with Diane Black. She's a congresswoman from Tennessee. That's all coming up next, straight ahead.
I don't wish him harm.
Right.
I don't. I just the volatility is, you know, to anyone who has been around, is to a degree alarming. But again, I don't wish him harm. He's got people around him that have been able to keep him, generally speaking, in the middle of the road.
Right.
The tweet, especially as it relates to foreign policy issues,
yeah,
I know have been very damaging to us, okay?
Yeah.
And I do wish that would stop. But, you know, as evidence this morning, he just, it's just something he has to do. One of the reasons I supported Pattis and Tillerson and Kelly last week is, again, as long as there's people like that around, you know, who are able to talk him down and, you know, when it gets spun up, you know, calming down and continue to work with them before a decision is made. I think we'll be fine. I don't, I do worry that he's, sometimes I feel like he's on a reality show of some kind, you know, when he's talking about these big foreign policy issues. And, he doesn't realize that, you know, that we could be heading towards World War III with the kind of comments that he's making. He called me this last week.
Right.
Asked me if I would reconsider.
Yeah.
And when I told him, you know, that just wasn't in the cards, he said, well, you know, if you run, I'll endorse you.
Yeah.
I said, Mr. President, it's just not in the cards. I've already made my decision. And so then we began talking about some of the other candidates that were running.
Look, if you talk about an adult daycare center, I'm sorry, but I think the Senate is an adult daycare center. They can't get anything done over there. We have been waiting for repeal and replace. We voted for it 60 times, and you tell me you can't give me a product to at least give to us so we can go to conference. You know, I think that is the adult daycare center. But I'm not sure that all of this throwing these words back and forth to one another are really very helpful. And I think the American people don't really appreciate the way people that are supposed to be in charge of this country are acting. Those kinds of conversations can take place behind closed doors if they want to talk that way to one another.
All right, 24 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. I mean, first you heard Bob Corker and all his arrogance and all his elitism and all his swamp talk. You know, that's him talking to the New York Times. This is a New York Times reporter. Yeah. And he's loving every minute of it. I don't think Corker knew that this was going to be released. Now, he was on the record because the comments were made. And then you heard from Diane Black. She's a congresswoman from Tennessee's 6th District, former nurse, by the way, chairwoman of the House Budget Committee. They actually got their job done. And, you know, if you want to talk about an adult daycare center that's not getting anything done, if Corker would spend more time fulfilling his promises, maybe we'd be a lot better off. It appears that Marsha Blackburn is making a pretty good effort to get in there and maybe take that seat. We like Marsha a lot on this program. We're going to obviously talk to her in the days and weeks ahead. Congresswoman Diane Black is with us. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Sean?
I mean, I'm like, you know what I was reminded of here? I'm just listening to Corker and I'm thinking, you are it. You are the swamp. You are the establishment. You are what's wrong in D.C. You are, you know, for now 10 months, Donald Trump's been president. 10 months. They basically, they haven't even gotten a third of his appointees approved, for crying out loud. And the next thing is they can't even get health care done in the Senate. You guys got it done in the House. You have 280 bills passed in the House that they haven't even picked up in the Senate, for crying out loud. And we're going to get lectured by Bob Corker? That's very frustrating. What are your thoughts?
Well, it is frustrating because right now what I see with the Republicans over there in the Senate is they're utterly incompetent. We have major pieces of legislation that would help this country, would help these individuals, people I represent. Things like Dodd-Frank. The repeal of Dodd-Frank would help our banks to be able to help people, especially in the middle, lower income. And we passed it over there to them. They still haven't done anything with it. We passed 12 appropriation bills. They haven't done anything with it. Sanctuary cities bills, nothing with it. Repeal and replace, which we know needs to be done. People in my district are suffering, Sean. And now we've passed over a budget to them, And the piece of information at least came out of their committee that they're going to be voting on, that piece of legislation, does not mirror or do nearly as much as our budget does. And so I'm calling on them to stand up and to do what we know the American people want us to do, and that is get some fiscal responsibility, put some mandatory reforms in there so we can start reforming our mandatory spending and get ourselves out of the position.
Right, but here's the problem that
we bring in.
We all know the time frame. You got to get this done in the House, then it's got to be sent over to the Senate. And you know, one of the things that really ticked me off is, you know, I keep reading, well, Donald Trump may have now alienated Bob Corker, and Bob Corker may take revenge on the president and not support the budget deal. And I'm thinking, oh, so revenge against the president is more important than actually moving the ball forward, which kind of I felt John McCain was doing when on the health care bill.
Well, that is that. Look, that is child play. That is an adult daycare center when we say, well, I'm not going to do this because you did that. I'm going to hold this up. We've got to be adults. We were elected to be adults. We're elected to come up here and do the people's work. And when we have passed the kinds of legislation that are major pieces of legislation to them, and this is what we're hearing is this arguing back and forth. Look, President Trump had an agenda. We have followed that agenda for the most part. Now, I will say we took us a little longer there with the repeal and replace, but we put out a product, and they needed to do their job to get us their product back, and now we have done our job. We have passed out of the House of Representatives a balanced budget, a budget that begins to go to mandatory savings and to stop this insanity of spending more than what we bring in. And yet we see that they have a totally different product. I don't know what the product's going to be at the end of the day, Sean. None of us do, because we can't guess on what they'll do. But what came out of their committee is not fiscally responsible. So we're calling upon them, take our budget up.
Well, I'd like to see them take it up. Have you spoken with your counterparts in the Senate? What are they telling you?
Well, I have a meeting on a weekly basis with Senator Enzi, who is the chairman of the Budget Committee. He has indicated to me, and it's what came out of his committee, is that's what they're going to take up on the floor. But that doesn't preclude someone on the floor to amend it. They could amend it to put some mandatory spending in there. They could amend it to make sure that it does balance in 10 years. These are very important pieces that were important to our budget committee and that were important to us when we passed it on the floor last week. So we've got to have these serious conversations. We've got to stop this bickering back and forth and do the people's work and support President Trump's agenda.
Yeah. Let me ask this. Is this just the framework for the budget, or do we actually have the tax bill that's going to move forward? Are we going to get to very specifics at some point?
Yeah, and you are right that the budget is really what we call the runway for the tax reform. You pass the budget first, and then the reconciliation instructions, or the instructions on what tax reform will look like, will be added to that. So the first piece of that that has to get done is, I called it the golden key to unlock tax reform, because you got to get that piece done first. It is the runway that sets forward to have the tax reform to take off. And so the next piece of this is, we've done our work. We've passed a bill that's a budget bill that does more than just set up the tax reform. It does other things that we know we need to do in a budget, and that is to balance it and show the American people that we're getting our spending under control. So it is this vehicle that will then allow the reconciliation language to actually go in place for tax reform.
All right, we want to wish you the best. When we get the specifics, we get off the runway, and we get the devil in the details,
yeah,
we want you back, because I think this is the key if we're going to help the forgotten men and women that have been left behind in this country. So anyway,
absolutely.
Congresswoman, what do you do you like Marsha Blackburn off the top of your head for the Senate, mm-hmm, or?
Well, Marsha and I have been colleagues for a long time, both back in the state House and Senate.
I didn't ask if you're colleagues. I know you're colleagues. You,
yeah,
both work in the House.
And we're both good conservative women, and so I think that answers the question.
So you're an early Marsha supporter. I'll put you in her column.
Well, again, you're going to see other folks come out, but I'll tell you, Marsha is a conservative, and she'd be a good senator.
All right, so you haven't made up your mind yet.
Well, you know, I may have other friends getting into this. I don't know at this point in time, but I will tell you that Marsha is a conservative.
Don't you hate going on talk radio programs, and people are as obnoxious as me asking you these questions?
I love it. I love you, Sean. You can ask those questions all day long.
Thank you, Congressman.
Okay,
woman, we
you
appreciate it. God bless, okay? 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, let's go to our phones. Patrick is in Jefferson, Georgia. What's up, Patrick? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What's happening, sir?
Hey, listen, I wanted to just make a comment about the whole Pence thing being at the game on Sunday. I don't think Pence should have ever been there. people are arguing and making comments about whether it was a political stunt and this, that, and the other. I don't care whether it was a stunt or not. I don't think he should have ever been at the game. If it's unacceptable to him to kneel for the flag, considering they were playing San Francisco, where all this started there, you almost knew it was going to happen. By being at the game, he's supporting the NFL.
Well, he didn't know what was going to happen. We don't know for sure what's going to happen. And there are teams now that are not taking a knee during these games, during the anthem. And so he saw it and he said, I'm not going to be a part of it.
Yeah, I understand. That's kind of one side of it. I think the way that you make the NFL wake up, it's been discussed before, too. Don't go to the games. Don't watch the games. Don't buy merchandise. Eventually, they're going to wake up. So by not going to the game, he's telling, regardless of what team it is, even if it's a team that doesn't kneel, you're still saying, I'm not supporting any of you till you all fix this. It's an NFL problem. It's all the NFL.
Yeah. Well, I think it is all the NFL in terms of this. But you know what? If I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan and Jerry Jones is saying, no, this isn't going to happen anymore, or I'm a Miami Dolphins fan and their owner is saying it's not going to happen and their coach is saying it's not going to happen, then I'm going to go to the game. And if they're playing a team that's going to take a knee, I'll have to make a decision. I'm not putting up with this. You know what? There's too many people fought blood and died fighting under that flag for me to just stand by and just say nothing and just accept it. There's a time and a place. Look, I've opened up my programs, if anybody from the NFL wants to come on and talk about any social, societal issues that we can help make this a better country, I'm in. You know, I'm totally in. They can come on these airwaves. We can talk it out. Maybe we can even partner together and do something good. All right, let's get to our phones as we check in with Don is in Houston, Texas, KTRH. Don, how are you?
Very well, Sean. So I served in the Army for 26 years. I was a lieutenant colonel. I served in the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Pentagon. And I got to tell you that I think the president should issue a directive to the Department of Defense, and he should do it in coordination with the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and say, from this point, no more American taxpayers' money, no more Department of Defense funds are going to be used to support any ceremony at any NFL event, because it's a waste of taxpayers' money to have them, on the one hand, use our troops essentially as props in their kind of Hollywood shows at halftime or pregame, and then turn around and disrespect the very flag when they want us soldiers to participate in a flag ceremony. I mean, it's the hypocrisy is too much.
The fact that we're spending any taxpayer dollars for the NFL to show patriotism is ridiculous. They ought to want to do that. They ought to. I always assume they did until it became an issue, and we find out the government's paying them millions of dollars to show off patriotism.
That's
ridiculous.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a good thing for the military because it's a great recruiting opportunity. But, hey, I'd say the president should say no more taxpayer funds, whether it's a recruiting opportunity or not, because we're not going to have our soldiers disrespected. You know, the worst thing I saw was when about three or four players kneeled right before the Marine Corps color guard marched by with the U.S. flag right by the sidelines. I mean, that was an awful moment. And, you know, to think that these guys would stand for God Save the Queen in London and then sit, kneel when our anthem's played in a foreign country, I mean, if that's not disrespect, I don't know what is. And they're gobbledygook that, well, no, we're just protesting police abuse. That's nonsense. We know what they're really doing. And and I hope the president will just say, Department of Defense is not participating anymore until you guys start to learn to respect the flag again.
I think that should go for Congress, too, considering they have the power of the purse. They don't have to give one dime to these people. Good call, Don. Appreciate it. We got an awesome Hannity tonight at 9 on the Fox News Channel. Hope you'll join us. That's going to wrap things up for today. Now, tomorrow, I'm only going to be a guest on this program. Hannity, what do you mean a guest on your own program? My buddy Mark Simone, who I saw earlier today, is filling in for me. I will be in Harrisburg, PA. By the way, I'm not taking off. I will be here on the phone. So not here, but in Harrisburg. We're going to do an interview with the president that will air tomorrow night, and we're looking forward to it. So that's coming up. Also, the movie comes out October 27th, and we've got literally all the theaters that we're updating it daily that will be carrying the film when it debuts. And we've got like a 3-week rollout with the movie, so it's going to be in theaters 1 week, the next week, the week after. So stay with the Hannity.com for all that information. I am going to blast Hollywood tonight and expose what the mainstream media covers up. Newt Gingrich, Monica Crowley, Geraldo, Burgess Owen tonight, Larry Elder, Joe Concha. That's all happening 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We'll see you tonight at 9 and see you back here on Thursday.